Welcome to the Rock.
Welcome to the BGP Lounge, everybody. Grab a pipe or cigar, a smoking jacket, your favorite beverage, a comfy place to sit, and get ready to hear the soothing sounds of App State football head coach Sean Clark. We finally have Coach Clark on. We would have loved to have his first, you know, BGP Lounge episode to be in person, maybe in his office with our equipment there, you know, in person. Those episodes are always the best, but we just could not make it happen between schedules and us all living in different places, especially me living in a different place. It's just hard to nail down a time, and we had to have him on. He shouldn't have taken this long anyway, and then especially with the coronavirus stuff, so we had to have him on, and we resorted to Skype like we usually do, but it's okay. We've always had a really good relationship with Coach Clark ever since he's been around. He's always been really, really cool to us, and he did speak with us at Media Day. He always gives us, he had given us a hard time for, I guess, a couple seasons for not being on there, but Dave Pastuzik has been, his buddy, battery mate from back in the 90s, the ancient times, the Stone Age, but I'm kidding. But no, it was great to have Coach Clark on. So easy to talk to, as you guys will all hear very, very soon. And listen, you hear him on the radio interviews and everything else, in his press conference. I mean, that's who the guy is. You know, he doesn't have to fake it. That's just who he is. Do want to thank our sponsors, Z-Box Mattress. Go to ZBoxMattress.com and look up literally every product that they have. It's going to help you sleep better, whether it's a pillow. They have different styles of pillows, sizes of pillows. They have different mattresses, types of mattresses, sizes of mattresses, firmness levels. They have mattress toppers. Everything designed to help you get a better night's sleep. And hey, listen, maybe some people are stressing out here at the start of 2020. It's been a really wild year so far. If you want to get better sleep, go to ZBoxMattress.com. Use promo code Black and Gold. And I promise you, you will not regret it, because I sleep on a ZBox mattress. I know of what I speak. And it's great. It's extremely comfortable. I get a great night's sleep every single night. It's the best mattress I've ever owned. And when the time comes, I have to get another mattress here in the next several years down the road, 5, 6, 7 years, however long it's supposed to last, or, you know, the recommended time you're supposed to have a mattress, it's going to be a Z-Box. I'm telling you right now. And also want to thank Faculty Resource. Okay, they were supposed to sponsor our baseball coverage, but guess what? Baseball has been cut short this year, but they still are a sponsor. We're still very, very happy to have the Faculty Resource and Forth Hefner, who's an App State grad, huge App State sports fan, supporting the Black Gold Podcast as a sponsor. Of course, the Faculty Resource, they are specialized consultants that basically help you get the most out of your employees by understanding what drives them. If you want to get the most out of your team, and I'm telling you right now, a lot of people are working from home, a lot of people are working remote right now, they want to be able to clearly communicate and understand members of their team so that they can motivate them to get the job done, and so that they can be motivated, and so communication can be clear across the board, across generations, across personality types. And the Faculty Resource and Forth Hefner, they're going to use detailed and scientific measurements about your team's regarding your team's personal characteristics to help solve the problems that you might have in communicating with them. And maybe you don't have a problem. Maybe you're trying to be proactive. Hey, I want to maximize our efficiency. If you're a sales team leader, if you're a manager, if you're a business owner, and you want to get the most out of your employees, and you feel like, you know what, we could be doing better. You know, maybe I can shuffle some people around. Maybe some employees would be better suited for a different place in the company, and they'd make a way bigger impact. Maybe that's the case. Well, I'm telling you, Forth Hefner, he's been around this. He's been around hires. He's been around managing employees, and this is what he loves to do. He has seen it work, I'm telling you, and I can vouch that from the stories we've swapped that this stuff's pretty awesome. You're going to want to contact him, 828-719-5051, 828-719-5051. That's his direct line, Forth Hefner. And also, can't leave out Ben McKeithen, your App State home and auto insurance guy. Look, I'm not stating anything anybody doesn't know. everyone's wanting to save a little bit more money nowadays, especially with all the crazy stuff going on. Why would you pay more for something if you could save a little every month? Whether it's your car insurance premium, maybe it's your homeowner's insurance. If you could save some money, isn't it a great time to have more money in your pocket? You can call Ben McKeithen directly, 828-964-3530, for a free quote. It costs nothing to just get a quote. If you can save you money, great. Put that money in your pocket. Save it. Or whatever, take care of whatever you need to take care of. But it, come on, don't pay more for something if you don't have to. Talk to Ben McKeithen, extremely friendly guy. He'll help you on the way. And I also want to thank all of our members that support us in the 333 Club at supportbgp.com. They go there, they financially support us each and every week. It is humbling. It is awesome. We have a great community at the 333 Club, our private Facebook group. It is a great time, and they actually got to hear the episode you're getting ready to hear, folks. They heard it a full 24 hours before anybody else because they are, you know, they're members. I try to give them perks, and it's a, like I said, it's a great group of folks supporting BGP. We're so appreciative. So anyway, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to just hop right in the middle of a conversation that we had with Coach Clark. You know, usually we do the intro like, hey, Coach, how you doing? But, you know, we hit off right off the bat. When Coach picked up the phone, we just started talking. I thought, you know what? Here we go. We're just going to talk. So I'm going to drop you right in the middle of our conversation with Coach Clark and just take it from there. So sit back, relax, and you're getting ready to step into the BGP Lounge with the soothing sounds of Coach Sean Clark. Well, first of all, you know, like I want to BS on here and not be so up and formal and everything, but it's really fascinating. We're living in an unprecedented time in any of our lives. You're the head football coach at a football school at your alma mater, and then all of a sudden society kind of stops. So what in the world is it like to be you right now?
Well, you know, there's not a manual for this. And it drives my wife crazy to this day that, you know, I kind of just go with the flow sometimes, but in the same sense that we have to have some kind of normalcy. So work does go on, and fortunately for us, it does go on, and we're not in the middle of our season right now, and I feel sorry for all the spring sports that had their season canceled. But, you know, we're still recruiting. We're still trying to get kids on the phone, evaluating tape, and trying to live some kind of normal life. But at the same sense, we understand that there's, you know, people that are dying and sick, and we want to make sure we're doing our part to make sure that everyone is good. And it starts in our community in Boone, you know, to make sure we're doing the right thing here in Boone and our state of North Carolina and places all around the world. But, you know, we're just trying to be as normal as we can be in the same sense that there's a lot of unknown and, you know, who knows what's going to happen. We're just going to kind of go with the flow right now and try to make sure our kids are our players taken care of. And that's probably the biggest point of emphasis right now for us is to make sure our players are taken care of. And as a staff, we are calling our players daily, make sure they have a place to eat, place to sleep, and to make sure their academics are on the right track.
Yeah. It seems that morale and spirits are up with some guys that are more active on the Twitters, you know, guys showing their workouts and you know, you could just tell that these guys are in such a habit of this is the time of the year that they're supposed to be hitting the gym with their buddies and their teammates and trying to make gains. And now they're kind of, you know, sitting on their hands. So they got to do something, you know, to have that camaraderie. And it's been really cool to see these guys kind of communicate by sharing videos, you know, and that's been kind of fun for us to watch.
Yeah, without question, you know, and when Coach Bi-Atlantic, you know, when it first happened, we had a workout set out to all our guys that, hey, Monday through Friday is what we're going to do. We have a four-day split, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday in the gym and running. We had a great workout plan for them. And then you know, plan B comes into effect that all gyms are shut down. So, you know, we have a plan for them right now who at-home workout. And it's kind of going back to old school, like the old Rocky movie, you know, jumping rope and pulling wood and all the fun stuff you got to do to survive. But we're kind of going old school a little bit, push-up setups and do as you can do. And we're going to find out when they come back, when everything's clear to who worked out and who didn't.
Is Dale Jones Ivan Drago in this scenario?
Without question. Without question.
Is he going to be cool that you just called him a communist? Is that going to fly with him?
Easy. That might come back to haunt.
I wouldn't call Dale Jones a communist. He's probably listening to. He's on Fox News right now listening to that. So he would not be a communist. Him and Rush Limbaugh are kind of hanging out right now.
Oh my goodness gracious! So hey, hold on a second. I gotta push the pause button for a second because this is something that Charles and I have kind of been laughing about. You know, we did this whole. You know, you hired your staff, obviously, and you know we're talking about hey these
are we
guys.
On pause? Are we on pause right now?
No.
Yeah, are we on a recording pause or
No.
I'm the record off the record.
No. No, this
you got to be careful of that language.
I know,
right
I got
it. How many times you done this?
You know, listen, this whole COVID-19 thing has gotten to me too, guys. It can't help it. No, we're not recording pause. I'm pausing the conversation to go back to something that you said just a second ago, which was you said Bielanek. Is that that's how you pronounce the strength coach's name, right?
Well, you know what? I'm not sure what is Bielanek. We call him Coach B, Coach Brad. I haven't seen his contract yet. I'm not sure how you spell it, but I'll go with Bielanek.
Okay, so I thought you were going to help us a little more than that because there's like five guys on the staff. We don't know how to pronounce their last name. So when we were going over your staff, we were probably mispronouncing everything. So is it Coach Rowe or Coach Rao?
Rowe.
Okay.
James Rowe.
All right. Well, he was a coin flip.
Taking notes.
You're taking notes. And what about, is it DeBastiani? How is that correct?
Well, it just depends what kind of day it's been. It's DeBastiani.
DeBastiani.
Right. DeBastiani. You can go by D-Bass.
Okay.
DeBastiani, all kinds of things. You know what? He was a great hire for us. He coached here in 1995 when I was a player. And,
right.
You know, he's kind of a coach that kind of took me under his wing in 2001 when I started coaching the University of Louisville and started recruiting. And I knew that if I could hire one guy, I wanted to hire him because I know how important it is to him and what kind of teacher and mentor is for our players. And that was a big time hire for App State.
Man, so you even back then knew that was the guy you were going to call one day if you were to head up a program.
Without question, I kind of knew what he stands. I know what he stands for, and he hasn't had the easiest of roads in the coach profession. You know, he's Bethune-Cookman at Norfolk State, and then he landed at the University of Florida as a quality control coach, and then went to Alabama A&M and then Central Michigan. And I just knew that if I ever got a head job, that's the kind of people I want on my staff, guys that didn't always have the easy road to get to Division I football. And he knows what it takes to win championships. Everywhere he's been, he's led the D, he's been a D coordinator many all three stops. And he knows what it means to have a championship program and really just take care of his players. And that means a lot to me.
How did he – so he coached defensive line when he was at App in 95, or was he a linebacker's coach?
He was Ruff McNeil's. Back then, it wasn't even quality control coach. It was restricted earnings coach.
Okay.
And he was Ruff McNeil's basically GA that didn't go to school. And I just knew I saw how he interacted with players, and I saw how the players kind of navigated to him when I was a player here. I was like, man, I have to have my staff if I ever get a head job.
Man, that's awesome. That's so cool. We love hearing stuff like that. So how would you get a guy like Coach Rowe? Because he's a younger guy. You obviously didn't play with him. I think the coolest thing about him, he played college baseball.
Right. Yeah, it was. He kind of goes back when I first got hired here, I GA'd for Jim McElwain, who was the head coach at Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd always stay in contact. And When I got hired here, myself and Coach Ivy went to the University of Florida and watched him do spring practice. And I saw this guy to the side. He was coaching his butt off as a GA. And we just kind of struck it up, started a conversation. And I kind of followed his career. He went from University of Florida to Valdosta State. And he was a DC at Valdosta when they led Division II in total defense. And fast forward a few years later, he's with the Washington Redskins and kind of stayed in contact. And And, you know, in this profession, you never know when you're going to cross paths again. Mm. And when they were let go to that, with the Redskins, I said, hell, let's call him up and see if he wants a job. He didn't have a job. So if I could get a guy with NFL experience to come here in Boone, and, you know, what a great recruiting tool it is for us, and plus the knowledge of football, and we're excited to have him here.
Yeah, no question. I think the thing, though, you mentioned NFL, you know, Robert Nunn, how in the world does that happen?
You know, it's in the coaching profession, you never know from year in to year out where you're going to be. It doesn't matter what level you are at, if it's NFL, Power 5, Group of 5, or D2 or D3. And he always came back to Boone in the summertime to visit Dell, and we'd go over Tiger Lake and kind of hang out and be on the boat and kind of talk ball a little bit. And when I got the job, and he didn't have a job, and we started talking, you know, possibilities of what could happen and what couldn't happen. And he needs a few more years for retirement in the NFL. And so I understand where he's trying to get to with that. And we kind of held on as long as we could. And I kind of called him on, I don't know, a week or two before signing day. I said, listen, if this doesn't work out, I'd love to have you back in Boone to coach your D-line. And the football guys smiled upon us, and we had a chance to get Coach Nunn here in Boone. And, you know, the guy brings 15 years of NFL experience, and a Super Bowl champion. And he's been a head coach at Georgia Military College. And those things are invaluable, especially for a first-time head coach, to be able to bounce ideas off. What'd you do in this situation? Or how'd you handle JPP with the Giants? Just different things you can do. And he's been a great asset for us.
That's right. So if he coached Georgia Military, that's where Coach Jones was for a long time. So that's where that connection comes from.
Yes. That was connection. And when Coach Ivy was here, and Coach Nunn was with the Jets, I believe, they'll go up there every summer and bounce ideas off of each other. And when he was in the NFL, they ran the same 3-4 defense, and he knows what we want to do, and we're familiar with our program, and it was a win-win for both sides.
That's awesome. You know, I figured that this would be maybe a challenge to, you get the job, you start off spring ball, everything's great, and then this totally unforeseen thing kind of falls in everybody's lap. But, you know, with how much this job means to you, and we know, look, we were there at your press conference. It was incredible. The energy at your press conference was amazing. I really don't care what happens with delays. You know, we want to get it right. We want to do the right thing. It sounds like everything you're saying, I know Charles would echo what I'm saying. And if he doesn't, he can feel free to tell you himself. But, like, the energy is high. You guys are super focused. And I love hearing how connections and relationships come full circle to then complete a team. You know, because you guys all have to be on the same page. And that's what it feels like when you kind of see how the stories are all connecting with why you wanted this guy or how you kept in touch with this guy. It's been really awesome. So you got to figure, even though you guys are apart, that energy and the focus is still pretty high given the circumstances.
Well, without question, you know, and first and foremost, we talk about the coronavirus, you know, we feel sympathy for everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's shutting down the world. It's shutting down the world, not just the United States of America or Boone, North Carolina. It's shutting down the world, and we'll make sure we do our part and make sure we're doing the right thing to help social distancing, if you would call it that. But you know, we're excited, you know, and there's a time and place for football. And when football comes back to be relevant, if you will, we're going to go full speed. And you guys know what it means for me personally to be the head coach here. Mm-hmm. It's a dream come true for me. And when the time is right and everything's cleared, that we'll be full speed ahead. And even though we're in a little pause right now, mm-hmm. if you will, as far as football-wise, you know, recruiting still goes on. And I wish I owned stock in Zoom right now. I'd be a rich man because, I mean, we're on Zoom every day if it's not with administrative meetings or position meetings or staff meetings. It's, life does go on, but we want to make sure we're doing the right thing to help everyone out.
That's right. One of the things, first of all, Charles, I don't want to just dominate. I don't know if you had anything to add to that or something to bring up.
Oh, no, you're good. Just keep on going. No. I'm gathering my thoughts.
He's mixing his margaritas and you know, camping out in the quarantine right now. So you know, one of the things, it's so funny. Before you got hired, this, you know, back in the Twitters, I even looked this up. I did a little bit of research, which we really don't do any research at the Black Gold Podcast. We kind of just wing it. But I did some research. You joined Twitter in 2013, and I remember seeing your Twitter account pop up when you were still at Kent State because, you know, you'd interact with guys like Ivy and Pastuzik and those guys. And I remember, you know, in Twitter, because, you know, I'm following these app guys. This was even before the podcast. Like, oh, so I'm kind of doing the math, doing the Google. All right, that's Sean Clark. He used to, you know, play at App State in the 90s, and he's keeping in touch with his teammates, blah, blah, blah. You, even as at Kent State, would follow what App State was doing on Twitter. You would like stuff that App State was doing, and you would comment to, you know, your teammates. And I remember thinking, man, that's cool. That's so cool because I, you know, obviously I gravitate towards people that still have a ton of passion for their alma mater. And I think it was so cool that you tweeted out. And again, sorry, I looked all this stuff up. I just did a quick filter search. So it wasn't like I spent a ton of time doing this. But December 19th, we won our first bowl game. You were tweeting Coach Ivy and you were saying, hey, you're a proud alumnus. And then almost exactly 4 years later, and well, 4 years and 2 days later, you were announced head football coach. That's kind of wild, isn't it?
It is wild. I'll tell you a funny story about that. The first bowl game, we're in Ohio, and we have a major snowstorm going off in Northeast Ohio, and the TV goes out right before the kick. And so I am literally pissed off trying to figure out what's going on. And I'm a tech-savvy person, so I jump my phone, can't find anything out. Well, my mother-in-law was downstairs, and somehow her TV kicked back on, and she's screaming, having a good time. And I'm like, what is going on here? And my TV pops on like 3 minutes later, and I see the winning kick. And, you know, just I was proud. I don't care where I'm at. When App State does well, or I was all for App State no matter where I coached. And like I said, I was so excited for those guys, for Scott, Mark, and Dell, and everyone else involved in the program. Is, you know, I always say this, you don't know what it's like to be a mountaineer until you're on the mountain. And I truly believe that. I just know what this program means to so many people, and including myself. And that's something that we want to make sure we carry on the tradition of App State football. And that's what I'm so excited about right now.
Yeah, no.
I'm gonna take a shot in the dark here. I unlike Alex, I actually research a little bit just in case I'm looking for nuggets out
all right,
there. Okay,
threw me under the bus.
So I'm gonna ask Coach here. Does the date of September 6th, 2003, mean anything to you?
September 6th, 2003. If I'm not mistaken, I was playing at the University of Kentucky. EKU versus UK, is that not correct?
Oh, you're close. You were at Eastern Kentucky, but you were playing at that day, and that was the day.
Okay.
Wow.
We laid a big old egg.
That's when we won, correct?
That was the one. That was the time. Yeah.
I do. I remember that very vividly. I can tell you it was a sunny day in Richmond, Kentucky, and the cows were across the street mooing the whole time. And if I'm not mistaken, that's when they came back from Hawaii, correct?
Yes, we were on the Hawaii jet lag, I guess you would say.
Exactly. You know, we did a study on that, and if I'm not mistaken, when you come back from the island, there's like a 10% chance of you winning when you come back to the States.
That makes sense.
And we did all the homework, and myself and Nolan Jones, who's our DFO, we recorded the game that night. It was about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning when the game was over. And we were breaking the game down on VHS tape back then, to be honest with you. And I remember it vividly. I was, you know, excited to have a chance to play the guys, you know, play against Coach Moore and Satterfield and Coach Elliott and all those guys. And it was fun to win, without question, but down deep it kind of hurt a little bit.
I thought that was interesting. I was thinking about all the, played Eastern Kentucky a couple of times, and, it was in Boone, and App took care of business then. But I'll never forget that Eastern Kentucky game because of basically that Hawaii game. Because you mentioned 3:30 or 4 in the morning. I think that's about the time I left Geno's sports bar that night or that morning after watching Hawaii help us around.
It's funny. We played them three times, and when I was at Eastern Kentucky, and we lost two times to them. But I'm not sure what year it was. 2003 we played in Richmond. 2004 was here in Boone. I believe 2005 was back in Richmond, and we called a reverse to Patrick Bug, and we were supposed to call a certain kind of reverse, and I didn't call the right play back then. And the head coach ripped my butt. We fumbled the ball and went 80 yards for almost a touchdown. So that game was it kind of digs my heart a little, to be honest with you.
Right. You know, that 2005 game was really the surge for the first national championship for App. With a road game, Corey Lynch makes a ridiculous tackle at the end of the second or the end of the first half to save a touchdown, and that was kind of our springboard in that game. I don't know if you remember that one as well, but
yeah, I sure do. It was in the red hash at the 20-yard line, going for a touchdown, going toward the scoreboard. So I remember that vividly. Number 47,
yeah,
making the tackle.
It's crazy. You know, it's crazy hearing names like Corey Lynch and talk about the mid 2000s teams. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I know you followed it. It's a lot easier now to follow these things with smartphones and the internet and everything else. But there's been a lot of, the App State football Twitter is doing a lot of flashbacks and well, it's not even that. A lot of fan accounts are doing it too. I can't remember the one that's doing the brackets for best teams, but the 2009 team came out, and there were 8 players on that 2009 team that played in the NFL, not like for camps or anything, but like played NFL games. And I think 13 or 14. Yes. And there were 13 or 4, I think it was 13 players on that roster that actually made it to NFL camps and actually signed NFL, practice contracts, actually went to camp. Talking about mid 2000s FCS football, that's really, when you look at how much unparalleled success App had starting right around there, right around that time when, Corey Lynch made the tackle and everything else, it's really steamrolled and built itself onto where you stand right now, which is awesome. But it really started way before even you played back in the 80s and even before that, but it's a continuum that I guess you've always had your finger on the pulse on App State's development as a program as a whole till today.
Without question, and I firmly believe this, that App State, it is a developmental program, and you have to, in the recruiting, you have to be careful. It's about a fit, player to program fit, and then also at App State, you have to realize that other schools, Power Five programs, have our recruiting board on their board. So we have to, we're not going to get the 6'5", 285-pound linemen who are really good football players. We have to project guys. And so for our linemen, for us, just for example, we're recruiting the 6'3", 6'4", 255, 245, 255 that we project to be a NFL lineman. You kind of look at, go back to Parker Collins, Colby Gossett. Those guys were not heavily recruited. But the Bo Nunns, the Vic Johnson, those guys were not heavily recruited at all. But, hats off to the previous staff that they saw potential. And you come here. The thing about App State, you always have great coaches. Mm. And when you have great coaches and you can have a chance to develop guys over a 4 or 5 year period, then you have a chance to be successful. And I'll put the last 30 years, our coaches versus anybody's coaches in the country. And I think App State will stand well above.
Yeah. It's actually,
What do you think the building block is of that? Like, how does that start that, like, good coaches want to come to Boone?
Well, everyone wants to win, one.
Yeah.
And also it's a quality of life. And, I said this in my press conference, unless you're in that building, you have no idea how special a place this is. And, you know, I speak just for myself, you know, the 4 years I was an assistant coach here, I had offers to go to Power Five programs every year and just thought it was the best fit for me and my family to be here and to build on what we have here. And, you know, some coaches want to take the next jump, and once they leave, they realize the grass is always greener, and they'd love to be back in Boone. Now, the paycheck can be better sometimes, but the quality of life and the quality of people you're coaching are a lot different here in Boone.
Even Nick Cardwell, right?
even Cardwell.
I bet he did a backflip when he got the green light, and he's obviously got a great, you know, mentor in you who's just, you know, a little bit down the hall or whatever to help take care of the offensive line. But here's a question for you, and I'm just picking on Coach Cardwell because we interact with him a lot on Twitter, and it seems like he can pick a lot of fun. But anyway, who have you coached at App State that reminds you the most of a young Sean Clark?
Man, yeah. First, I was not a very good football player, to be honest with you. But the one thing I would not recruit myself right now. But the one thing I did, I would outwork people. And that's what I kind of took pride in, is that I thought I was tougher than you, and I thought I could outwork you. I knew I could outwork you. I just think, you know, one person that really stood out to me is Ryan Neusel. I think Ryan Neusel and Noah Hannon, those guys were damn good football players in high school, didn't have the right, you know, so to speak, size, weight, speed, but those guys are tough football players. They know how to win, and they'll do whatever they have to do to be successful.
Yeah.
How hard is it to find that? Like, how do you, like, if you're just watching tape, how do you see toughness?
Well, that's something you really can't tell, but with spring recruiting, and the one thing we've done well here the last 30 years is do our homework on players, and you'd be surprised of all the homework that goes into it. Not only just, you know, watching videotape, but, you know, we're talking to the high school coach, the assistant coach, the principal, the vice principal, the counselors, to see what kind of person they are. And I truly believe that if you have it, and that you have a chance to be successful, and by just doing your homework, and there's been many times we talk to custodians in a school, and they'll they tell you the truth about people, and they have no dog in the fight,
right?
And there's been many times throughout my career of coaching, I would talk to whoever, and I'd ask them, hey, what kind of kid is he? A tough kid. And those guys would tell you, and just little this and that, and to hear other people's input. I truly believe if you can get all that stuff and get enough people involved in it, you can get a feel for what kind of kid they are.
Mm, yeah.
Have you ever spoken to a custodian and been really high on a player, and the custodian, like, turned you the other way, like, nah, you don't want that guy?
Many a times, and they have, like I said, they have no dog in the fight, and that's one thing. When I was at Purdue, we were recruiting a 4-star old lineman out of Ohio, and we talked to a teacher who didn't even teach the kid, but in the same sense, she told me, she said, you don't want that kid on your program. And he did not come to Purdue, went to another Big Ten school, and 2 years later, he was no longer playing Division I football. So, those people, they'll give you the real story. You just got to listen to it, kind of weed through the BS, and make your own decision on things.
So you went over a lot of your background at your press conference. Not everybody heard. I'm sure a ton of people heard your press conference. Maybe it's been a while, but I we love talking to former players that, and obviously you're in a totally different role. You're head football coach, but when we do talk to former players that, you know, don't have anything to do with the program, we love talking about how they got to App State, how they became a Mountaineer. You're from Charleston, West Virginia. I don't know anything about Charleston, West Virginia. What's that like?
Well, a lot of mountains.
Okay.
It was a great place to grow up. You know, back when I was growing up, that was a big industrial town. You had Union Carbide and DuPont and SMC, which were big chemical plants, and the coal business was really booming back then. But you fast forward 25 years later, the chemical plants are gone, the coal is shut down, and there's not much in Charleston anymore. And I had a counselor. It's kind of a funny story. I had two counselors in high school. One told me that I should go to a trade school, and the other counselor by the name of Kaki Eller told me I should go to Appalachian State. And it was, I mentioned this in my press conference.
Yeah.
And I blew my knee out my senior year of high school and went to Fork Union Military Academy in Virginia. And at the time, I wanted to be a mountaineer. And John Schumann said, "Son, WVU does not want you. You're going to VMI if you don't commit to App State today." So I called Coach Moore that day and committed to him, and kind of the rest is history. But, you know, it's kind of funny how things work out. You know, I truly believe the good Lord has a plan for you, and I was supposed to be here, and the rest is history.
We need a really good Coach Moore story. Everybody's got a good Coach Moore story.
Oh. How much time do you have?
We got whatever, however much.
Whatever it is your schedule.
Well, back when I was a player here, okay, you guys are probably familiar. There's a place called Savannah Joe's, and but every Thursday night was a big time. It was a big college night at Savannah Joe's, and of course went to Savannah Joe's, and there was a disagreement between the football players and another group, and things didn't work out in their favor, and there was a big brawl on River Street, and so Coach Moore had we're in right in the middle of spring practice, and Coach goes, hey sucker, you guys want a sloppy Joe's and fighting everybody, and he could never get Savannah Joe's and sloppy Joe's the distance of it.
Oh, that's great.
He said, "Y'all going out of sloppy Joe's down there?" He said, We ain't never lost a fight." Well, yeah, you're right, Coach. We never lost a fight. But that was my best story ever, because he couldn't get Savannah Joe's and sloppy Joe's squared away of where it was.
Well, it sounds like it was a Freudian slip that actually was probably correct.
There's so many great Coach Moore stories where he's flipping, flopping the words. Brian Estridge, who he was on, gosh, what was Charles probably 2 years ago.
Two or three years. Yeah.
Yeah. And he told us how he had just gotten into town, you know, I want it, 1989, I guess. And some football players had gotten into a fight at Geno's, and, you know, he had to have the serious, you know, confrontation with this team that he had pretty much just inherited, and he couldn't think of the name, and he said, "Yo, messing around down in that water wheel deal."
Oh, drinking that hooch in that water wheel.
Man, that's fantastic.
It's terrific. It's terrific. So what were the Savannah Joe's? Coach, I apologize. I'm a little young on the young side of Savannah Joe's, so I didn't get to experience. What are some other spots that you remember from the mid-90s in Boone, North Carolina, outside of football?
Well, you had, of course, you had Savannah Joe's, you had the old water wheel, and then you had the Charlie Horse, which is now the Mexican restaurant there by the movie theater. Those were the biggest three, big three establishments in Boone. And you always had to work at the Pike House. That was always a big Friday night deal in the off season. But, you know, that's what kind of makes it special here, because, you know, those three places were nice, but most of our time was spent around each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it so special here is, you know, we sit back and I talk to the old guys like Dave Pastuzik, and, you know, I can go Bate Baker, I can go on and on, Damon Scott, you know, a bunch of great players. And, you know, the most memorable experience we had, we're always together. It didn't matter where it was at. And that's what makes it didn't matter where you came from, black, white. It didn't matter. Those guys were all true Mountaineers, and that's what makes it so special.
Yeah. No, Pastuzic. I mean, I would ask you to tell some past stories, but I don't even know if we're allowed by the FCC to broadcast any stories about Dave Pastuzic.
That's definitely unbroadcastable.
Yeah. I might not have a job with all those stories we did, so I can't
do that. But you overlapped with him. Is it 2 years you overlapped with him, 94, 95?
94, 95, that was three, and 96.
Oh, okay.
And so him, myself, Lance Ware, we were all on the same floor together. And I said, yeah, they're great people and had great work ethic. And you can see why all those guys have been successful in life, because right. they know what it means to work. And, you know, we had a great time in college, but it's really, it's neat to fast forward 20 years later and to see everyone have kids and grow up and see what kind of dads they are. And I'll never forget Coach Moore always telling that, you know, he says, when I'm successful, I'll see what kind of husbands you are, what kind of fathers you are.
Mm.
And I'm proud to call those guys my teammates.
Yeah, no, for sure.
What dorm did you live at, Coach?
What, Justice Hall.
All right.
Okay. I had a feeling. Just very curious about that. I don't know why. Nothing good happened in Justice Hall.
Thank God there's
no about to tear it down. Can you believe that?
It's sad. I talked to the administration already. I said, if you want to raise money, have one last hurrah in Justice Hall.
Yes.
But people would pay a lot of money to have one last hurrah in Justice Hall.
We can have a coronavirus party in there. I think that would be amazing. People would pay for that. They'd pay a little bit of money to go in there and burn it down one last time.
You save on demolition.
You would.
You can save on the demolition for sure. You got to be grabbing a few bricks though, right? You got to maybe for paving a new patio, get some Justice bricks.
I'm telling you, anyway, you know, that place is so special. You know, guys, when we recruited here, you know, it's their grandparents lived in that dorm.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what's crazy about it, to go back that far and to hear stories about living in Justice Hall. And I think every year the stories get better and better and better. But I just know that's what kind of separates, you know, back in the 90s to now, is everyone lived in Justice Hall. That was the football dorm. And every Thursday night we had hall meetings. And you had to be on time. There were many times when if players were 1 minute late, that they were kicked out of the hall meeting and didn't play on Saturday.
Wow.
And that was from the upperclassmen. That wasn't from the head coach. And I truly believe that goes back that far. When we talk about them player-led programs and player-led teams, I think it goes back that far in the 80s, late 80s and early 90s. Those guys really set the foundation for this program to where it's at today.
So I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball. It just occurred to me to ask you this. Does the name Mark Meyer ring a bell to you?
Mark Meyer. No, I know the name, but I really can't put a face with it.
Okay. No, I used to work with Mark Meyer. He's a principal now, high school principal, and he played for Coach Ruffin for, I think, 94, 95, or maybe 95, 96. He's on the defensive side. Anyway, I asked Paz about him because as I got to know Mark and know Paz and whatever, he's like, yeah, tell Paz to say hey. And I told Paz, and he said, yeah, the Praying Mantis. Apparently his name was the Praying Mantis. And it cracked me up. But I don't know. That's a shot in the dark. I didn't know if you remembered him. He didn't play, like I said, all 4 years. But here's the thing that I think was actually underplayed this past year, or I mean, to my level of curiosity anyway. You beat your former O-line coach last year. What was that like?
I did.
I mean, it was
great.
There had to have been trash talk in there somewhere, even if it was respectful.
You know, we in this profession, whenever you have a lot of respect for someone, when you play them, there's mutual respect, but down deep, you want to win just for the bragging rights. And with Coach Searles, I have so much respect for him, but what he's done as a coach and what he's meant to me as not only as a coach, but as a person, as a player. I mean, he's treated me like a son.
Mm.
But we go back to when I was a GA at University of Louisville, and he was coaching at Cincinnati, and we split. We won 1 year at Cincinnati. I mean, I was at Louisville. The next year he beats at Cincinnati, then comes back, and he's at Miami of Florida, and they get after us pretty good. So he had a 2-1 advantage till this year, and then we beat him at Carolina. So we're tied up 2-2 right now. But again, I just can't say enough good things about him. It's just a mutual respect as a player. He was my position coach,
right. So
I love him dearly. But you want to kick his butt whenever you get a chance.
So there was no texting or communication at all during that week or after. You just kind of like let that really really hot moment just kind of die down a little bit before you communicate. How does that work?
Well, beforehand you always text him and say, "Listen, take it easy on us. We're poor Appalachian State, and you guys are in the ACC, and yeah. Mac is back, and please take it easy on us."
I love all this.
And, yeah, all the fun stuff you got to do, just kind of set them up a little bit. And I knew our kids would be ready to play. Hold on a second. But in the same sense, I told him take it easy on us. They get out on the first play of the game and score a touchdown. And he stares right across the field to him. He kind of puts his hands up in the air. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Let's go. And long story short, we win the game. And I sprint right to him and give him a hug and kind of give him an extra squeeze and tell him I love him. And then I let it die for about 24 hours before I called him. And when I called him, if he just knew Coach Sherrill's voice, he said, "Yes, Clark." And I said, "Hey." I was like, "Hey, Coach, how are you?" And he said, "Go ahead and say it. You know, go ahead and say what you want to say, this and that." But, you know, there's so much mutual respect. And a guy that I pull for all the time, no matter where he's at.
Right.
He's one of my mentors, and he means a lot to me and my family.
Was that the highlight last year? Well, I don't know. It's hard to say because – conference championships are obviously. I will say this. I mean, you're inherently a fan. You're a former player. You're a current coach. But from a fan's perspective, it was so worth the wait to play Carolina after all these years. I mean, forever, generations. You know, we have been saying forever as fans to other Carolina fans. You know, if we ever played you, we'd beat you. And no, ACC and blah blah blah. Well, we finally did. So it was hugely gratifying. Not because they were some. You know, they weren't Clemson, but we had just heard enough about the flagship. Last year, how would you rank your most satisfying wins? Besides your first one. You had the first one as the head guy in New Orleans. I understand that. But last year, 2010.
What people don't realize is in college football, it is hard to win college football games.
Mm-hmm.
And this sounds kind of cliche, but every win is a great win.
Right.
But, you know, when we set off last season, we want to win our state. And that's with the school in Charlotte, University of North Carolina, and we consider South Carolina in-state also. So you get a chance to play against Coastal Carolina, and then down and play South Carolina, and so to win your state, I think it's gratifying. And anytime you can win a Power Five game, no matter if it's North Carolina or South Carolina, those are all obviously big wins, but. As a coach, a big win the season not the biggest pivotal moment of the season. Our main goal was to win the Sun Belt Championship, and whenever you can do that and put a ring on our guys' fingers, I think that's the most gratifying win is to win a conference championship. But I don't take anything away from those wins because those are all big wins, just not for our program but for our fans and for the state of North Carolina. I wish we could play in-state schools more often.
Mm.
I think it's good for college football. I think it's something we should look into. It doesn't cost much for us to go to Chapel Hill or to Raleigh or Durham or wherever it may be. I think it's good for college football. It's good for our state. And it really sparks some interest in everyone in the state of North Carolina.
I personally think we should play Wake Forest this year. I think we should make that happen.
I think it's going to happen.
Fingers crossed, guys.
Fingers crossed. Oh, yeah. Hey, whoa. Get the mojo out of here. Get the bad mojo.
I know. It's no, I got, that's terrible.
Hey,
I gotta stop.
Hey, so you, 1998? That was your obviously your senior year, where Daniel Jeremiah had the dive into the end zone to beat Wake Forest. Was that 98?
That was 98. Sure was.
There you go. 22 years ago. When Charles, when's the last time we played Wake Forest in Winston?
I believe it was 2001. Yeah, I was a junior, I believe. We lost that game, if I'm not mistaken.
No, it was 2000.
But we should have won.
2000.
2000? Okay.
We beat in the 2000,
maybe I was
correct?
A sophomore. Either way.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was 2000.
Well, I don't know why I'm getting mixed up without looking. Yeah, I don't have it. One of those games when I was in school, we lost something. The other one we won. But yeah, I mean, those Wake Forest games were just all types of fun. I really wish we had a Saturday this year. Man, that would have been a lot of fun. But Friday night will be fun too, though. I'm sure we'll pack it out. I don't think Wake Forest is ready for it. It's our fan base, really, to invade. That's going to be special.
Again, Coach Claus does a great job down there in Winston-Salem. But I know the App State faithful will be ready to go. And like I said, it's I wish we're playing on a Saturday. But, you know, in big-time football, when TV talks, you jump on TV.
Yep.
And so we'll play on a Friday night. And I know the App State faithful will be there, and they will definitely hear us. I promise you that.
We have one of the members of our Facebook group told me a couple months ago. He said he lives really close to Wake Forest, and he said, "I just want everybody to know, everybody in this Facebook group is welcome in my house as soon as the sun rises on that Friday, September 11th.
Oh Lord, I'm gonna need some beets.
It's gonna be crazy. 333 club's gonna be crazy. It's gonna be an awesome. Hey, so in doing research, there was a 2-year gap, and I have no idea what you're doing. What did you do after you stopped playing between the time you actually got into coaching again at Louisville? I think it was Louisville you got your start.
Yep, it was. When I first got finished playing, I had a chance to work out for a few NFL teams, and that lasted for about 3 weeks probably. And then I had to find a job, and I was going to go to the State Police Academy in West Virginia. I was already accepted to it, and I was going to be a state trooper back home. And again, that didn't work out. That didn't work out. And I worked for a place called Ted Lansing Corporation, and I got a job in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I was there about a week and was transferred to Roanoke, Virginia. And I worked there for about 3 or 4 months and was transferred back to North Carolina. And the call came from Mike Kent, who was a strength coach at Louisville, wanted me to be a GA there. And I told my dad I was going to be a football coach. He said, "I don't know how much money you're going to make." And I said, $8,000 a year, Dad. And he about had a heart attack. He said, "Son, you're making more money than I am right now than I have my whole entire career, my whole life. And you're taking a pay cut to make $8,000 a year." And I said, "Well, I promise you I'll get my master's degree." And he said, "If you promise me that, I'll give you my blessing." And so I made the old jump to making $8,000 a year and went to the University of Louisville. And from there, you know, kind of made my jump. Got hooked up with a guy named Danny Hope, who was the offensive line coach at the University of Louisville. And he got the head job at Eastern Kentucky. And I went there with him. I was there 6 years at Eastern Kentucky. And then we were fortunate enough to win a few championships, and he went to one to Purdue as a head coach in waiting, and I was fortunate to stay there at Eastern Kentucky with Dean Hood for one more year, and when they went to Purdue for 4 years, and it's kind of took off from there. And that again, it's the one thing in this profession you're not sure where your road's going to lead to, and that's the one advice he gave me, is be the best offensive line coach you can be, and good things will happen to you.
Yeah,
that's what I've always tried to do, is just be the best O-line coach I can be, and you know, when my time came, I was prepared for it.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about how you got your start at Louisville, and then kind of in a roundabout way, Louisville was the reason you were able to kind of get promoted to your first head coaching job?
Without question, buddy. It's, yeah, that's a whole different story.
I thought you were a slow roll me.
Oh, that's a whole different story. Yeah, without
that question, might be an offline conversation.
Yeah, that's an offline conversation. But in saying that, it's, I always say it's, it's your best job is where your feet are. And when after the bowl game, when Eli offered me the job, and I took it. Yeah, I love it here. And at the time, it was the best offer I had, to be honest with you. And when he offered me a job two weeks later, I have three Power Five offers. And I just felt at the time this guy gave me a shock to be the O-line coach here at App. And we talked about it. And I really believed the way he was selling. And fast forward 1 year later, and I'm saying I'm the head coach of Appalachian State. The good Lord works in mysterious ways. I'll tell you, it's a funny story. I was in church, and our preacher said, when one window shuts, two doors open. And I was like, man, this is unbelievable. I had a chance. I'm here, and we're going to make the best of it. And now I'm the head coach of Appalachian State.
That's unbelievable. That's still unbelievable to me. That
and we love it. We love it.
And this is what we wanted, and look, we're fans. We can do whatever we want. We say whatever we want. You're living your dream, but it's your job. We're fans. We love supporting it and being irrational and crazy. But when Coach Drink, left, he had stirred the pot so much in terms of bringing new stuff, new attitudes, and everything else. And hey, 13-1, you can't really argue with it at all. But with that roll of the dice that obviously worked, you hire a coach to win. So, Doug hires this guy from NC State, and he parlays his first head coaching job into this massive contract at Missouri, which, God bless him. But we're like, all right, hold on a second. That was a roll of the dice with the outsider. It gave us a heart attack, and when he left, and give us our guy, And here you are. And so that basically, that bet you put on yourself to stick it out here, it's paid dividends. You got exactly what you would have wanted out of the situation. How often does that happen? That never happens. And it happened.
It's not. I tell you, my dad's an old Vietnam vet who's a mechanic. And he always had a saying. He said, bet on yourself. And man, I've always taken it to heart. And I'm going to bet on Sean Clark because I believe in myself, believe what kind of person I am. And that's kind of what I did. When those jobs came open, the ACC and the Big Ten last year, and I talked to my dad, and it was like verbatim from when I was 13 years old. He said, Sean, bail yourself. And I told my wife, so we're staying here. We're going to ride this out and see what happens. And now I'm here.
But that was the goal.
I'm the head coach of App State.
But that was the goal, right? You wouldn't stick around if you didn't want the job, right? Say it.
Without question. without question. And, I truly give Eli Drinkwitz a bunch of credit. And, he came into a spot that, he was left to the Fiore. All he had to do was put the keys in it and keep between the lines. And he's a damn good football coach. And, hats off to him. And that he wanted to be in the SEC, and that's where he's at. So hats off to him and his family. And no one can blame him for doing that.
Right, sure.
But in the same sense, I knew where I wanted to be, and it's something my wife and I talked about a long time ago when we were young and no kids. And she was asking me, why are you working so many hours for her? I said, I want to be the head coach of Appalachian State.
Man.
And she kind of chuckled a little bit, to be honest with you. And I said at my press conference, and it was an emotional time because, I'm saying I'm living the dream. And
yeah.
How many people can sit here and say they're coaching their alma mater, a dream come true, and it's a kid from West Virginia who is a first-time college graduate from anybody in his family, and now I'm the head coach at Appalachian State. It's something I don't take lightly, and I'll work my tail off as long as I can to run me out of here.
Right, yeah, and it's been so awesome. It's been such an awesome time to win the off season. We talk about that all the time with Coach Drink because he gets hired, Sat leaves, and we're like, we don't have a game to play for so long. He's got to win the off season, and so far you've done a great job, and everybody's excited, everybody's happy. We got our guy in there, and we're just so thrilled for you. I mean, you were always so friendly to us and cordial, and it was always fun interacting with you. And when you're O-line coach, and so we're so happy that you're the guy and you're leading something that means so much to us as fans. And I'm speaking for a whole lot of fans, thousands and thousands of fans at this point. It's really awesome. So, congrats, Coach. Thanks. We apologize. It's taken so long. We really wanted to do this in person. It's just up to this point.
Can we do it again?
We can do it again. Yeah, 100%. We can do it again.
this ain't the last one.
No. So,
you know, here's the funny thing about it, guys. Like, I can't be somebody who I'm not.
Right.
And I'm Sean Clark. I mean, I was an assistant coach for 4 months ago, and I can never change who I am, and I'm going to be who I am. And I just know that my family and I are so excited to be here and be around you guys and the fans. And hell, we got BGP pullovers now. So we're supporting you guys all over the place right
and,
now.
And yeah, polo shirts.
That stuff.
And polo
that
shirts.
Stuff in cheap, you know?
I mean, my wife wears that pullover more than I do.
Well, good.
Three of them.
That's good. That's
it's
good.
It's comfy.
Yeah, it is comfy. That's the way it's supposed to be. But, Coach, we appreciate it, man. We're going to wrap. This won't be the last time. We wish this could be in person and we could sit and talk and BS and everything else. But unfortunately, with whatever is all going on and whether it's life or coronavirus, we're settling for the Skype. But it's awesome. Thank you for your time. We know you're busy. And good luck with helping with the homework tonight.
No, I appreciate it, guys. Hey, thanks for all you do for App State football. It means a lot to all of us, and you guys do a great job. And where we can do to help you guys out, let us know.
Right. Thank you, Coach, so much.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, folks. Have a good one, buddy.
Awesome.
Appreciate it, guys.
See you. Bye.